Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Game Store Profits, episode 150. We are the podcast where a handful of guys get together to talk about games and God and how these things come together beautifully. My name is Mike Perna, and I am with one of your hosts, Daniel Fisher.
Hello, hello, hello. How are y'all doing tonight?
Sadly, we are Romo-less. Romo had some family sit-downs that needed to happen, so hopefully we'll be getting him back in the next episode, because he has been killing it with RPG content on our YouTube channel. So if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel yet, you should probably go and do that.
Oh, yeah.
He's about to start up The Sprawl, which reminds me I need to sit down and create some corporations for him.
He when we did the RPG jam session this week, he's like, can you wear some cyberpunk-looking glasses and some hats and clothing? I'm like, no.
I am not one of your playthings.
Yes. So anyway, but I did put on a pair of red blue 3D glasses for him just to make him happy.
You know, of all the crazy, weird things that people do, I don't know what it is about 3D glasses, but they just scream like, this is a little bit weird. Maybe it's the fact that I have an unnatural love for Doctor Who, and specifically the David Tennant years, when for at least part of his tenure, he was wearing that, I'm just going to say it, that horrible suit and those 3D glasses.
Yeah. Well, these are a little bit higher quality. I use them for Minecraft. I paid a whole dollar for them. And they're plastic, and they cover over my other glasses.
That'll work.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, what you been up to lately, man?
Well, the baby should be here any day now. We have bets. We're taking money on when the baby's going to show up.
Oh, we were literally even just talking about this episode when we started doing the pre-planning. We did have to delay it slightly, but we were doing it like, well, Lord willing, the baby won't be here, and we'll be able to get this redo date.
I mean, my wife came home from work the other day with flu-like symptoms, which is a precursor to going into labor. I don't think she's going to make it past the end of the week. And, you know, just for everybody, this is my third child, not my first child. So, Lord's given me two other children. More minds I get to work. But it's been pretty much getting things ready, getting our stuff packed. I've got our bag packed for the hospital, and I've got the kids' bags packed to go to grandma's. And I did get a chance to play some role-playing games with my daughter. It was her second group experience with her little friends, and we had a blast. One little girl goes, when are we going to do this again? And she was new. It was her first time playing.
So. Well, you had, I can't remember exactly what episode it was, but it was maybe like one or 12 or however many episodes it was ago that you had talked about your first session and how you found out your daughter's a murder hobo.
Yeah, well, she wasn't too bad this time. She actually calmed down a lot. I did have to egg her on a little bit because of, you know, she was being too cautious this time. And I'm like, it's...
Swing that pendulum, man.
Come on.
Swing it.
Come on, kid. You know, you're right. You just cut back what you did last time just a little bit, and you'll be perfect this time through. But yeah, she was being a little cautious, and I think it's because we had the new kid there. And I did break a cardinal rule of DMing. I let the new girl... We were missing one of the other girls, and the new girl wanted to be the same class as the girl that was missing. So I was like, just use her character sheet this week. And so I got an earful with my daughter.
I'm not going to give you too hard a time, but all I know is the last time I let somebody play my character for me, that character ended up drawn and quartered on the altar of a dark god. So I understand the frustration.
No, this girl, it's our lead pastor's daughter, his oldest daughter. Her name's Abney, and it was so funny because she had some of the best dang roles, and she understood the Benny system for Savage Worlds better than anybody else. I said, when you screw up a roll and you want to reroll, give me that Benny and just say I'm rerolling.
And she, just because of the fact that I know for a fact that we've got some people who don't know how that goes. The short version of what a Benny is, because I know what you're talking about, but not everybody does.
It's a slang word for benefit. So you being a wild card, you have a Benny. You get three every game session, and they usually are poker chips, and you hand it back to the DM, and it's called spending a Benny. And when you botch a roll that is not a damage roll, when you botch a roll so bad, you go, I want to spend this Benny. And you can buy one purchase of a reroll that one time for that one issue. And then you could reroll. But, I mean, she was, like, she was rolling so high. I mean, she was just like, you know, I don't know what it was. They had the magic D6 is what they said. It kept hitting sixes and exploding. And, like, there's points where she had gotten... like, just hit points on, it was crazy. Like, she has a longbow. She was a dang ranger. And she, at one point, did, I think, was close to 30 points of damage in one pull. Because that six kept popping back up, and she kept re-rolling it.
I was just That's like, crazy.
I was like, oh my goodness. I need to build better dice towers.
I would imagine, though, that I know for me, I still get this, but it was especially true when I first started playing. I would get so psyched when I would see that kind of stuff happening. That was the kind of stuff that kept bringing me back to the table. Yeah. Now, eventually I became much more of a role-playing nerd, but back in the day it was all about how do I crank. I was totally a munchkin like a champ when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And so it was always how you get more and more. So the fact that you can just keep rolling and keep exploding, yeah. I bet with the age of the kids you're playing, it was probably insane.
Yeah, so like they get all excited, and of course I had them all hopped up on sugar anyway. I didn't make food because we didn't have a lot of time, so I just ordered pizza. But I'd gotten one of the huge jugs of Hawaiian Punch. We had, you know, Cheetos and cheese puffs, and this one girl drank probably about half that container of Hawaiian Punch, and so she was like, shaking and like, oh my goodness, and just all excited about it and just playing. And my daughter's like, oh my gosh, because she was sitting right next to her because she was helping her show her what dice to use. And my daughter was like, oh my goodness, you're gonna keep rolling sixes, it's exploding. And then she would just keep going and going and going. And it was just, we got about 2/3 all the way through our module. One more session, we should complete it out. But the cool thing was, I asked my daughter, so after we finish this, I'm gonna sit you guys down, teach you fifth edition. Because you want to play it at school. And this is what my daughter said to me. Dad, actually, it's more like father. Fifth edition is too mainstream.
So you're raising a hipster murder hobo.
We don't want to play it anymore. We do enjoy Savage Worlds. You were right. It is a lot easier to play and understand out of the gate. But it's still just as fun. But father, please don't make me play fifth edition. I was grinning on the inside, even though I do enjoy playing fifth edition. I love Savage Worlds so much.
I'm very well acquainted with your love of Savage Worlds.
It's just a good system. Anyway, but yeah, I'm doing that and getting things ready, painting miniatures and writing articles and all that other good stuff.
You're gonna especially have to get geared up for painting miniatures, because something especially awesome happened to the two of us.
I know. I can't. We gotta wait a year.
All right. Let's share with the good people at home.
Yes.
There have been a couple of times when I've told people about, you know, people who have been generous to the ministry and who are helping us out with games and things like that, and who literally help us financially make this thing happen. There have been some times when we've gotten some truly ridiculous, crazy donations to the ministry, like the fact that we have a copy of Invisible Sun that's coming at the end of the year and stuff like that. We always want to thank people who support us. You know, every one of you guys does such an amazing job of supporting us with prayers and with just encouragement about the stuff that we do. You guys are fantastic. But we especially want to those people who go above and beyond the call. And Daniel and I,
Sorry.
Got, in all honesty, like, we're playing coy with this, but it really is a huge blessing because it wasn't even, I even gave this individual an opportunity to make it an official donation to the ministry and get the tax write-off and all that stuff that we're allowed to do as a registered 501c3. I was happy to do it, but he goes, no, this is just a gift for you guys. Daniel and I have received each a copy of Rising Sun. This is, I'm pretty confident it's due to the fact that he and I both refused to shut up about it.
I'm still going to refuse to shut up about it. It's a beautiful game.
But the person who, and it very well could be that in the comments here or when I post this in the tavern, the person can go ahead and reveal who they are. They didn't specifically tell me they weren't going to, they didn't want me to make a big deal out of it, but I usually just try and leave that to them if they want to get called out or if they just want it to be a secret thing with us. But that person knows who they are. And they specifically said, and the reason I wanted to bring it up especially, it was the fact that when we were talking about whether it should be a donation or whatever, he made it a gift. And basically what was said was, my father was in ministry for 40 years. And he goes, so I know that a lot of times you do a ton of work that no one ever sees and no one ever thinks about. And a lot of it goes unnoticed and unappreciated. I will say again, y'all do a great job of showing your appreciation for us. But
oh yeah,
at the same point, it is true. There is a ton of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. All the paperwork I need to file. All of us are running these groups. I'm working on TavernCon right now, and that is pretty much every waking moment when I'm not doing all the other stuff I have to do. So there is a ton of stuff just making inroads happen. And he goes, I just want to thank you guys for doing the work. And it really was just an un-freaking believable blessing.
I know. I mean, it was just like, with what happened with me, though, because as you listeners know, I did put out there that for honor of my child, and this is still going on, you could send me an email. It says free dice, and at the end of April, I will draw from the many people that put their name in and send them a set of dice. I will either send them some RPG dice, or if you play just tabletop board games and you just want standard dice, I'll send you standard dice. But, just email it to me. But this guy emailed it, and we just started in the conversation, and he just said, hey, I just want to donate this to you because you guys are so infectious, and you get people wanting to play games. And I was like, oh, what?
So, again, I'm not going to put the name out. The person can totally come in and say, it was me, and I was super happy to do it. I will leave that to them. But we do want to just wow. Yeah. We're totally blown away by this.
Yeah.
Expect to have nonstop awesomeness. I fully expect to have Daniel go on our Twitch channel, which I'm hoping will be fully functioning by that point, and just have a marathon painting session of all the amazing ridiculousness that's going to be in that box.
Oh, it's going to take forever.
Come on, you'll love every.
I know I will. There's no issue with that. I just got to get better at my airbrushing. I've started airbrushing a lot of my miniatures now, and so I've got to get better at that. And because these deserve to be airbrushed,
I would imagine so.
Yeah, they're that beautiful. So that's all I got to say about
it. I will say that I, for what I've been up to lately, I've been doing some stuff for the website, which has been awesome. We've got Daniel's going to be putting out. I'm going to say both of these partly to let you people know at home and partly because it encourages me to make sure that both of these pieces get put on the site before this episode goes live. So it's accountability on my part too. But Daniel's going to have his, I think, is it the first piece you've ever had for the website?
I think so. I've done stuff on my website, just game reviews and things like that. But I get a lot of questions about people getting into painting miniatures, and I've been doing this for a long time, and I figured, I'm repeating a lot of the same information over. Sometimes I mess up and tell them the wrong thing. So it's just good to go ahead and make a how to get into miniature painting. I figured we needed it.
So yeah, I am Also, even with the stuff coming up for the site, I also have a handful of new games that I have to learn, especially with several game days coming up in the future, because last episode, Daniel talked about the games that he was sent by our good friend TR Knight. Yes. And I had said at the point of last episode, I had said I had yet to receive mine. I have now got mine. They're actually behind me. The games that I got are Dragon's Gold, Evolution the Beginning, and Arcana. And these games are really interesting, but I'm actually at least semi-familiar with is Dragon's Gold, to not get into a full-on deal with that because we've got a lot to cover. Dragon's Gold, you're basically trying to, you have a certain number of characters that have different value, and you're trying to destroy these dragons and take their stuff. But the cool thing about this isn't just a simple, you know, play cards down, gather loot. There's a part where you have to negotiate with everybody that's involved. You're basically splitting the loot. So everybody that was involved in taking that dragon down has like 1 minute to negotiate a proper deal to split the loot across everybody who participated. If after that minute you cannot come to a mutually beneficial agreement, nobody gets anything. And so I am fascinated with this concept of trying to figure out how can you very quickly make your case and make it so that you are getting some stuff. Oh, yeah. You're getting the stuff that you want, because there's a lot of different types of treasure that you can get. So that's the one I'm familiar with. I'm super excited to get that one to table, because again, I like that interaction. It's one of the reasons why, speaking of Rising Sun, one of the reasons I'm really looking forward to that is that whole negotiation aspect. Like that idea of getting in and not only just doing the thing, but convincing other people to do the thing with you. That, it's my bread and butter. A lot of people don't like that stuff. A lot of people, it will actually turn them off from a game, but it drives me. The other ones I'm literally just learning. And so I'm very excited about it, because Evolution the Beginning is kind of a card game where you are trying to get either one species that's really pumped up and has a lot of population, or you spread it out a little bit and you're trying to evolve your species to the point that you can withstand all the attacks of other people and you become the most thriving population in the area. It's a really interesting thing, especially when somebody starts, you know, becoming a carnivore and like actively attacking your guys. Yeah. So that one's going to be fun. Arcana, I literally know nothing about this game, but this is a testament to the fact that sometimes you're just looking at a box and you go, I don't care what this game is like. I want this game because that artwork looks awesome. So I know it's a card game. I know it's in a fantasy setting, but it's to the point where I have not even begun to set even the tiniest little bit of time apart to go into that rule book and to dig in. But I am very excited because it just looks so cool.
You sound like me.
No, I'm easily amused.
I know.
It's what it breaks down to. But the big thing that is going to be coming out on the site from me is I'm working on another Theology of Play article, and it's going to focus heavily on this weird experience that I've been seeing lately. Everybody who's listened to our show will acknowledge the fact that my wife is not a gamer, because I've said it multiple times. There are a handful of games that she enjoys, but pretty much if she's playing a game, it's to humor me. Mm-hmm. It's because she loves me, and she knows I love games, and she knows that I, you know, have a way of relating to people that's unique when it happens over a gaming table. Right. So I want to bring her into that world. Mm-hmm. She will never be the one who instigates gaming. If she's saying we need to play a game, there's one of two things that are happening. Either we have guests that are coming over and they're gamers, or I've had a really terrible week and she's just like, I need to do something nice for him. Let's play a game. You laugh, but that's literally been why we've played on multiple occasions. But, you know, for you know, I've been kind of just poking. I'm like, maybe if I find this game, maybe she'll like this game. Maybe this is the game. And every time it's like, oh, that was fun. And then just that's it. Like she could, I can just still see it in her eyes that this is something she's humoring me about. And she like, I love you. And that's why I'm enduring this. But recently, she's actually been the one who's instigated playing. And it has nothing to do with the actual game that we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it is the method by which we are playing that game that has got her. The game that we play is Lanterns. I'll give you a brief rundown of Lanterns, because whether you're playing it in the physical game or the digital game, the rules are exactly the same regardless. It basically takes place in this harvest festival where there's a giant lake and people would just put out these paper lanterns and these elaborate colorful displays kind of just as a celebration of the harvest and new life. And I looked up, I actually did some research on this one. The background to this theme, there's actually like questions as to what the full etymology of this thing is. Like, people are like, oh, it's the harvest and it's new life. There's a bunch of different little angles. You know, it's the whole idea of winter being over or winter, you know, everything like that. It's a simple game, but in that very devious kind of way, because the way it works is that you start out with one tile and it's got several different colors on it and you have three tiles in your hand, and those tiles will again be filled with colored lanterns. And you have to match, well, you don't have to match, but you're looking to match colors on that first tile, and you're kind of building it out Carcassonne style. Mm-hmm. So it's in a lot of ways, it's just like a tile laying game that we've seen a bunch of different ways. But the thing that is interesting about lanterns is that you collect lanterns in the color that is facing you. So say, you know, you put the tile down and there's white lanterns on your side. Your opponent has red lanterns facing them. So you'd collect a white one. He'd collect a red one. So every time you play a tile, you're not just giving yourself stuff. You are giving every other player at the table lanterns as well, based on whatever color is facing them. And then you're also gathering additional colors in case you're able to match colors on the tiles that you placed it next to. So say you laid down one tile and there's a white one facing you, there's a red one facing you, and then the tile that you put it next to also has a red one that matches up with the red one you just placed. So you would not only collect the white, you'd also collect a red because of the match. The whole reason that you're collecting these lanterns is because you're going to make a dedication. And there's three different types of those that give you points. There's four of a kind, so you get four lanterns of the same color. There's three sets of pairs. And then there's literally one of every type of color of lantern. And depending on which dedication you make, you'll get a certain number of points. And then to add another layer onto that craziness, every time you make a dedication, the future dedications of that type get basically fewer points. So you want to try and race to get to these higher dedications sooner, because every person who makes one makes them just that less, that the value of them becomes that much less. So, and there's some other stuff involved in it as well, where you can get tokens that let you exchange colored lanterns for other colored lanterns and some other stuff. There's also an expansion, which I've only played in the digital version. But that's basically the game. You play a tile, everybody collects the appropriate colored lantern, and you try to get as many points as you can before you run out of tiles. It's a fairly simple game, but there's a reason why the folks at Mensa have given this game an award. Like, there's a whole lot of stuff going on, because remember, you have to take care of your own stuff. You have to make plays that will get you the best lanterns while at the same point not giving your opponents the lanterns they need. So there's a whole lot of strategic decision making, even though it's a simple game. Susan and I have played this before. We played the physical version of this game because a friend of ours has a copy and will often bring it with her to game nights. So I knew going into this that Susan enjoyed Lanterns. What set this apart was actually in light of the fact that if you've listened to Bard and Bible, you heard me talk about my wife's trip to the emergency room last week. And because of that, she was completely laid up. Like, she's fine now. The pain's kind of pretty much dissipated. But, you know, she was already just, even now, she's just exhausted. So when the heat of everything with going to the hospital kind of died down, she's like, I want to do something nice for you. Again, when she wants to do something nice for me, that means we're probably playing a game. And so she's like, I want to play a game with you, but I'm just so tired. And she looked at, you know, I'd say she looked at me, but really she was looking face first into the table because she was that exhausted that she couldn't even raise her head. And she goes, I really wish we could just play a game in bed. And I said, you do know that's a thing we can do, right? Because my phone is riddled with board game apps. And she goes, well, which games do you have? Because she knows when I talk games, there's a lot of stuff that, like, I have, I think currently on my phone, I have Nurashima Hex, and I've got Mr. Jack Pocket Edition. And so she's like, oh, there's a bunch of games that she has absolutely no interest in. But then I said, Lanterns. I've got Lanterns on here. And that, the digital version of that game is gorgeous because they're not tied to the physical medium of these cardboard tiles. You actually are putting lanterns out on this lake, and you actually hear the water, like the drop of the water as you're plunking them down on the lake. And there's this cool music in the background, and koi fish are, you know, going through the lake. It's really a gorgeous app. And I've found myself now, after we played a couple games that first night, Susan is now instigating the gameplay. We're sitting there lying in bed. You know, she goes to sleep way earlier than I do. So I'm usually just lying there staring up at the ceiling. And she goes, hey, you got your phone? Because we can play Lanterns. And it still blows my mind that she's the one instigating this. And it got me to thinking about just the fact that I've spent years trying to find the game that will get Susan excited about gaming. And I was like, if I just say this one thing, if I just show her this one game, if I just introduce her to this one thing, then it will make sense. Then she will get it and everything will be great. And what I realized was that I think my methodology was wrong, because instead of figuring out what game I needed to get her, I needed to find out how she wanted to play. Because the idea of laying down in bed and playing the board game was infinitely more appealing to her than sitting at the table.
I think a lot of times the things that we love about board games, people actually don't like, and that's the bits and bobs.
Yeah.
And you know as well as I do that whenever you get that new board game and there's like lots of cool little bits and bobs, we're like, oh, look at this. Look at these little coins, or look at this little token here. And other people are like, why has it got so many parts?
Oh my goodness. The number of times I've opened up a box and been giddy about the amount of cardboard that I need to punch.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, why are you so excited about that? That looks tedious and boring. I go, no, man, listen to the pop.
And then you're like, I get to go get some sandwich bags.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, I think some of it could be that. But that's awesome that you kind of found her thing, because there's tons of games out there. It's like one of my favorite games to play on my tablet is Ticket to Ride.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And games are doing a lot of really interesting things now that they've gone to a digital format that they can't really pull off necessarily, or they do pull off in the physical copy, but they just add layers of stuff. What are some some of the games that I have, if you're not just talking about stuff on my phone and stuff that I can get on my computer as well, I love the Mysterium app. I don't know if you've played that.
Yeah.
Mysterium is amazing as a game. The short version is that one person is playing as a ghost and every other person is playing as a psychic who's trying to basically solve the murder of the ghost.
Yeah.
And so the ghost can only show visions and dreams. And so it's kind of like Dixit meets, you know, a murder mystery.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
And they made that into an app. And it's really interesting because you're playing it and you don't. I mean, yeah, I'm the first one to argue. I mean, literally, I'm currently crafting a speech for the guys at Game Church about that there's something unique and special about being in the same room together. But that app is in a way that people can play that game regardless of where they are. And that's a well put together, gorgeous app. Cult Express has an app form now, which is really, really interesting. And you'd think that that one would lose something because so much of what people enjoy about Cult Express is that 3D train.
Yeah.
Because it's a heist. You're basically in the middle of a train robbery movie and you're trying to program moves to get your guy to get the most treasure and get out without getting shot. And I remember when that came out, everyone was like, oh, it's all about the physical pieces. I mean, look at this. It's a cool train and there's little cactuses and everything. And like even the expansions that they've come out with all add more stuff. Like you can add like horses and stagecoaches and stuff like that. But I don't know. There's something about the accessibility. Like you said, you know, there have been plenty of games where I'm like, oh, I love all the bits. And I'm a sucker. I'm that guy who even when my job was to sell ebook readers, mm-hmm. like for a while there, that was my job. And people were like, oh, is this the one you use? And I had to be very diplomatic about the fact that I don't use e-readers
yeah.
for most things because I'm that guy who I'm that nerd who sniffs old books. And I think that is kind of where I'm, it's kind of what's resonating with me when it comes to this idea is that I had, in order to get to a place where I was communicating how awesome games were to Susan, I needed to change my entire methodology. I needed to change my perspective because my perspective is give me the physical stuff. Give me the cardboard. I want to have the cards in hand. I want to be at the table. I need this stuff. And even when you bring in the digital stuff, I go, I really kind of want that physical element of it. I want to be in that place and to have that thing. So I had to step outside of myself to kind of see it from her perspective, see it from her understanding, because all that physical stuff means garbage to her.
Yeah.
She was looking for like, how do I play this in bed? How do I play this while I'm relaxing? How do I play this where I don't need to get out all this stuff, where it does the math for me, where it reminds the first time we played, she was still kind of, she wasn't on all of her painkillers, but there was some significant painkillers in her system. So the idea that the app literally told her, hey, you can make a dedication now and make some points if you want to. And she didn't have to know that that was happening. Like she could tune out and still make those points because the app told her that. Just, it changed everything. So she could literally just enjoy matching the colors. She could literally just enjoy lying there with me playing this game. Because one of the things I've had to convince her of is that games have innate value. Mm-hmm. That the act of playing together in and of itself has value. And it's something that she's never jived with.
Yeah.
But when the app took away all the fiddly bits of playing this game and it just became about how do I make this tile the best match that I can make it, she loved it. She enjoyed it so much, the fact that she's the one who wants to play.
It makes me happy. Now, if I could just get my wife to do that with, say, zombies or Blood Bowl.
Well, and again, I think that the important bit is stepping out. Like, it's fun because I think we have this general understanding because of what we do.
Right.
We always play the games that other people want to play, not the games necessarily that we want to play.
That's true.
And to a degree, I think that this is the logical next step of that. Not only are we playing the games that other people want to play, but to really interact with them, we need to play with them in the way they want to play.
Right.
Maybe think of it this way. Think of it from the role-playing perspective.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing with role-playing, and this is why I see a large push over to the digital format, is that people don't have time for it. I mean, they don't have time to go to their friend's house, but they could sit at their computer for a couple hours. But just leaving their family at home to go play a game, you know, people don't do that anymore. So I think I see what you're saying, though. I mean, I completely agree with you. It's just whenever I come over to your house to play games, we're going to do it at the kitchen table, buddy.
But the one thing that keeps sticking with me about this is because, again, we always try to take what we're learning at the table and kind of see that when it comes to faith and right. the way we interact with people and the way we just see life. And I think that there's been kind of a theme and a trend in the way we approach this stuff that says that you need to put yourself in the shoes of another person. Put yourself in the hurts of another person from the perspective of another person. But I think that this is an interesting element of that. And I think it kind of takes it into a slightly different direction because it's not about finding the right thing. It's not about making that like, oh, if only they just saw this.
Yeah.
If only, you know, because, you know, for a while there, I would say that, and I think we've done this to our detriment. And for a while there are, as is the overall, you know, aspect of church. I mean, granted, that's a big blanket statement, but I think so much of how we approach sharing God with people is, oh, we just need to get them to hear this speaker, or we just need to get them to this meeting, or they just need to meet this person.
Right.
And that'll change everything. That'll make everything connect and it'll make everything fit. And I think that we're missing that element that says, what if the entire fundamental structure under which this person does anything is completely different to our own? Putting thing A in slot B does not make this a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that I guess we all got to grow and change the way we do things, because that's part of our ministry. It's part of what we do. I mean, it's not about us anymore. We keep saying that over and over again, and it's about God and what God wants us to do. But the thing is that we reach people differently. So, I mean, it's everybody has a way to them. You know, I always like to imagine, it's like, maybe there's that secret word that everybody has that God's put in their head. And, you know, this was me as a kid, too, that if I just say that word, then they know that God is real. And they know that Jesus died for their sins. And you know, I always thought about that. But then I realized that, you know, if there is, I would never know it.
Yeah.
But I mean, part of the fun that we get to have is trying to find what motivates people, what moves people, and what people want to do. I mean, yeah, you've sat through lots of word games with your wife, you know, to play games with her, to find that game. You've had fun and she's had fun, but now you've found the way.
Well, and the thing that made it so clear was that we played the physical game of Lanterns before.
Yeah.
And she enjoyed it, but it didn't register on any kind of long lasting. It's like, oh, I played that game. Yeah. That was fun. But now she's like, oh, we need to be playing Lanterns. This is like our thing now before we go to bed, is we play at least a round of Lanterns.
That's cool. It really is. I mean,
and
it's kind of like reading to your kids at night. You know, you make it routine and it just becomes part of it. And
you make it a thing. Yeah. I remember there was a time in college that I can't help but relate this to. When I was in college, we used to do occasionally, I didn't do it all that often, but some people did it regularly. They did old school, like street witnessing. You go out and you just talk to people about Jesus, like cold turkey, just boom, whatever. And I didn't go a lot, but pretty much there was one time that I would go pretty much whenever they were setting it up. It's when they'd go to Princeton, because some of these folks were at the time, like I was in my junior, senior year. We went to school outside of Philly. Some of these kids had never done any of this. And I felt myself being like the elder statesman, which is funny because now I look back and I go, wow, I was an idiot back then. But at the time I felt like the elder statesman who knew everything. And they would go and they're like, there's a textbook, which is a book that I still reference occasionally because it just does a really good job of summarizing a lot of deep theological doctrinal issues. It's called Basic Theology.
Right.
And these guys are flipping through this book and go, oh man, we're going to go to Princeton. We're going to take this book. They can't argue against this. Yeah. And I go, guys, shut your face right now. Because literally the garbage men in Princeton know more than most of us. Like, that is a highly educated area full of people who think super deep and philosophically just sculpt an argument. And I go, they will destroy you. I go, if you go in to argue with them, they will destroy you. And they're like, no, but you can't argue against this. You can't look at this. This logic is flawless. And I looked at him and I said, I can dismantle your argument in one sentence. And they're like, no, you can't. And so I said, all right, hit me with it. And they laid out this like 7 or 8 minute spiel. And they're just like, this proves this and this and that and everything like that. And I listened. I just sat there and I listened. And they're like, and you can't deny this. And because I'm a showman, because I can't just say a thing, I had to make it like an event. And so I leaned in and I extended every word just dripped with the no, you fools. I said, acting as an individual on the streets of Princeton, I looked at them and said, I don't believe in the Bible. And they kind of paused and I go, gentlemen, every argument you just made, your flawless logic, hinges on the fact that the Bible is the perfect word of God. I said, your logic will not convince anyone. And they're just like, oh, you're just wrong. And it was great seeing them. I'm not going to lie. I did revel a little bit when they came back and they're like, I'm like, how was it? And they're like, well, it was okay. because they were going on a certain framework. They were going under the understanding that this is how this works. And you clearly this is true. So that means A, B, and C must be true. And they just, I had to try and open their eyes to the concept that not everybody is on the same page that you are. You can't just crack that one thing and be like, ha ha, now you believe in God. 'Cause clearly you have to. Like it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I've seen people. I've dealt with people the same way. You know, it's just they think that they can make that argument that would turn everybody to Christ. And I'm like, no, it don't work that way at all. I remember sitting a lot of times in, what were those? You know, the Way of the Master videos.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness. Okay, I understand, Kirk Cameron, you're trying to do something good, but like, you know, people don't get it. I mean, they don't want to get it, and you know, that's not going to help. And explaining to them that a banana is God's perfect, you know.
Look, I'm not here to bash the man.
I know.
As much of a goof as that dude is, I know he's coming from a good place.
I know, me too.
So I don't want to do too bad to a brother in Christ. But at the same point, I will argue that one day, if I had any musical talent, I want to put together a band and name that band Kirk Cameron and the Magic Banana.
Yeah, and for y'all listening out there, we are not trying to bash Kirk Cameron or anybody like that or anything that you use as a tool.
But I will bash that methodology. I will bash that methodology that says if all they need to do is hear this and they will automatically see it because this is the, you know, this logic is flawless and your answer, it isn't. It really isn't.
Yeah. And, you know, just because that's actually putting it more in your hands than God's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're like, well, they just had to hear this come from my lips. No, they don't. They have to listen to the little whispers in their heart from God. Our job is to plant a seed, and then it's his job to water it. And, you know, if you think you can go out on the street and be like, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you this, and then you're going to come to Christ because this is the truth, it's not going to work that way, guys.
If we find somebody who, you know, can lay it down so dead on that everyone is compelled to believe, I will personally go out and raise the funds to get that person on every radio station, every TV network. We'll get that sucker on Netflix. We'll do what we gotta do.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that there's no methodology that works that perfectly.
Yeah.
There's no logical argument that transgresses all boundaries and all lines.
Because everybody's different.
And the beautiful thing about that is that God is bigger than all of that. God transcends those differences. And I'm full of stories of my own things that I've seen, but that doesn't even count all the stories that I've collected from other people. One of the coolest stories that I've ever seen, and this one's not mine. I will fully admit that I've gathered this story from other people. So, you know, if you're looking to look at this as gospel truth, I'm on like third hand at this point. So I just want to put that out there.
All right.
But I was listening to this missionary tell the story of how he was basically going around. I can't remember what part of Africa he was in, but it's one of those things. Like, we're not talking about the cities. We're not talking about the villages. We're talking about literally like nomadic people groups. And there's this one group that no one even knew where they were because that they just moved around all the time. But he had heard that they were on the other side of this mountain. And he gets up on his motorcycle and he drives over there and he talks to them. Their language was close enough to some of the other local languages that they could communicate. And the technique when you're dealing with people who've never heard anything about God is you start with Genesis from the beginning, from the creation narrative. Right. And so he's walking through the creation. He's walking through, he gets to about, I think he said that it was like somewhere around like the Exodus. And this dude looks at him and says, so when are you going to tell me about Jesus?
Yeah.
And the dude freaks out. And he goes, was there another guy like me who told you that name? And this guy goes, no, I was asleep last night. And I had a dream. And this man in the dream came up to me and said that tomorrow morning, a white man is going to come and he's going to tell you about Jesus, so and you need to listen to him. You're clearly the white man, so I'm curious when you're going to tell me about Jesus. And hearing this experience blew my flipping mind. And in the course of hearing that, it was actually part of my seminary class. And we started talking about that, and we're like, why don't we see, you know, as American Christians, modern American Christians, why don't we see that? And I started thinking about it. I go, because we'd write it off.
Right. I mean, I've had this similar discussion with our small groups and our mission groups, because when going to other countries, we see miracles like this all the time, especially in Central America. I've seen and just little things. And I've witnessed one hands on, but the problem is we write it off. And two, us as people are Americans. We spend so much time watching TV, doing all these other things that it wouldn't affect us when we saw a miracle as much as it would affect somebody else. Because we're like, oh, well, we saw somebody do something similar to that on TV one time with special effects or something like that.
Well, and that's just the thing about it is that, like, I don't think it's a shortcoming necessarily. Yeah. It's just that literally our entire framework, our mental framework is completely different.
Right.
So why do we spend so much time communicating in a way that would get written off? And so it's been fascinating just to see different people's experiences, to step into a completely different mindset and see how things change, see how God himself changes his methodologies to speak to different people in the places that they are. I think one thing that sucked about the way the post-Reformation church kind of did missions, we kind of sucked because rather than, you know, saying you need to hear about Jesus, we said you need to hear about Jesus and dress like us and talk like us and do this other, like, we came in full on colonial with this crap and as you know, associated following Christ with following the way we say. And I think we did a huge disservice of that, because like you were saying, it became more about it wasn't about following God, it was about following us.
Right.
And this whole concept of changing being willing, I think that's the big thing, is being willing to change your methodology, to step into the reality that other people are coming from a completely different page. They're not only not on the same page as you, they're not in the same book.
Right.
And rather than trying to shove that square peg in a round hole, I'm mixing metaphors like a champ tonight. But I'm sticking with them because they're perfect. Rather than trying to stick that square peg in a round hole, we really just got to start looking for the round pegs.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of it. I mean, we do. We have to find what connects people. It's not going to be a universal key, but we really got, and that's part of it, is you have to know somebody, you have to build that relationship with them to get that to that point of understanding what makes them tick and what's going to work with them. And that's partly what we do. I mean, that's our job, is we learn a lot about people, you know.
And even building off of this whole experience with Susan, I know she liked the game Splendor.
Yeah.
And she really enjoyed Splendor. And I'm like, oh, I can get Splendor on my phone for like $2. So I asked her, I go, hey, Suze, do you want me to get Splendor on here? And she goes, no. and walk with me on this. I asked her and she said no. And I'm like, why not? Because you really liked Splendor. And she goes, yeah, but I'm looking for light pre-bedtime experiences.
Yeah.
And Splendor is great, but it's not that.
Yeah.
And so I go, oh, okay. And the idea of what made lanterns great was that she could literally just enjoy the color and the sound and all the, like, she didn't have to worry about the fiddly bits because the app just took care of that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, she doesn't have to worry about crafting her strategy. She just matches colors.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like playing Bejeweled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I, like, so even within the, like, I wanted to peg down, oh, it's the app stuff. It's all about the apps. And I go, no, it's not.
No.
But it was only in stepping into what she wanted and what she's looking for and the place that she, you know, she finds herself. Yeah. That was when I can start truly identifying what, and it takes refinement.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, oh, she liked this, so that means she likes that, which means I have to jump on that.
Yeah.
It's this constant refinement of, oh, well, why does she want that? And what's the purpose behind this? And what is the driving force for that? All right. I think that's a good place to wrap things up this episode. So Daniel, what have you got around the corner? I know you're Baby. Continuing to, yeah.
Yeah, I'm, as I said, as Mike pointed out, I am working on a few articles about painting, getting into painting and learning, because trust me, people, I've spent a lot of money on this, and I'm one of these people that I've already done it beforehand, and I don't want you to waste your money, so I'm going to come up with some good plans and ideas for you. But also, remember, I'm still going to do the giveaway. I'm going to run this until the end of the month. And
what did you want on the email for this
What I want is you send me an email to daniel.l.fisher@gmail.com, and what I want you to do is to take and just put in the subject line free dice, and then put in there the reason why you think you need a set of free dice. And I've gotten some pretty crazy answers, so just send them on in, and you know, hopefully. One entry per person. By the way, I will weed out people trying to do duplicates. But yeah, we'll try to get you some dice out there.
All right. So yeah, folks, you can find all of us on inroadsministries.com. That's INNroadsministries.com. We're pretty much on everything social media. So we're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook, obviously. And all that stuff you can find on our website. TavernCon is coming up. So if any of you are in the greater New Jersey area or plan to be on June 10th, it's our annual fundraiser. We're just now starting to get some of the donations coming in, and some cool companies have decided that they're going to help donate stuff to us. Our friends at Buttonshy are donating some stuff again. We've got folks from Haba, which I'm super excited about because I cannot shut up about how much I love Haba games.
Some of the best games out there.
Oh, they're amazing for kids and everything like that. I always love a kid's game that adults can play without wanting to gouge their eyes out.
Oh, yeah.
We have, was it Cat Lily Games? We have the Expedition RPG guys. We've got a bunch of stuff that's coming in, and there's still a lot of people we have yet to hear from. So, super excited about the stuff that we're going to be able to give away this year, about the way we're going to do things. I still want to do the Pretense Meta Tournament, which is where we play the game Pretense. Like, which is a game that's played while you're playing other games. Our resident champ is Miss Katie Shotik, who, holy crap, that if she hasn't confirmed if she's going to be back or not this year, but if she is, that woman is a shark and never trust a thing that she says. I love Katie, but wow, if she's got a Pretense card in her hand, don't trust anything. But again, this is the event that we do every year. It's literally how we keep doing events. It's how we keep expanding the ministry. So really super excited about this. We're going to have 10 hours of open gaming. Our friends from the Bodana group are coming in. It's going to be a great time. So June 10th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. If you're in the area, please come by. We would be happy to have you. All of that said, there's a lot of cool stuff going on, but always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.